Why so serious?
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game and still getting trying to play you.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the toy department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, toy department time. We managed to put this one together. Derek Madden, he's Matt Kolsky. How are you today?
Well, I just want you and the people to know that I am not unlike Kevin Durant, taking my own health in my hands for my teammate Derek Madden and my fans, because I turned off the fan in my bedroom, and I'm not sure if you're aware of this, but the Bay Area is in the middle of a foul heat wave.
I actually am aware of it because every Bay Area person I know is bitching to me about it.
And you're like, suck it and shove it, you bunch of whiny little...
Nope. I just file it away because, 5-6 months from now, I'll have my own annoying weather bitching. And then if anyone complains, I can be like, remember? So,
it was like 90 and you acted like you were stuck in the Saharan desert with no water. You remember that?
Yeah. That's exactly how it's going to roll. I too am making my own sacrifices today. I am, I'm talking to you now from lovely Louisville, Kentucky.
Woo!
My luggage, however, yeah, I know. I'm going to Churchill Downs tonight. Actually, there's no racing, but I'll be at the racetrack. But yeah, my luggage is still in Detroit. And when I say still in Detroit, that's weird because I have not been to Detroit at all. Not sure why my
not
luggage
even a stop.
There. No, there was no stopover. It was a direct flight from Minneapolis to Louisville. I checked my luggage at the gate.
Oh, boy.
And yet somehow my bag is in Detroit. So
that's not what you want.
It's not what I want. Not what I want. Was not planning on wearing this later, but I'll be wearing it now and was going to work out today and put that on hold. And here I am.
On the other hand, perhaps a good opportunity to buy some nice new workout clothes.
Yeah, maybe. Or a large bottle of bourbon.
That works too. You know, that's right. That's good for you as well.
Yes, it is. It certainly will make me forget about the luggage, at least for a little while. So we got a lot of stuff to get to, and we're going to try to do this quickly today because I'm on the road and you've got places to be. So we're going to cover some television premieres, some television endings. Let's start with the endings. Do you want to start with Billions?
Sure.
Now that we have concluded, how do you feel about this season of Billions as a whole?
Good. I'm not sure I quite got the, like, explosive axe and chuck. You know, I think at the end of last season, when it was like, oh no, here come axe and chuck teaming up, it was like, that's gonna be great. And it was okay.
Yeah, that's kind of exactly, I think you nailed it. Like, the axe and chuck together was a little underwhelming.
They discovered this could be fun in some ways, but it's not nearly as fun as these two titans facing off against each other. And so we're headed back that direction for next season, and I'm good with it. But
yeah,
well,
you, sort of we are. And this is obviously massive spoilers, but I feel like the pivot to, you know, taking this love-hate affair and making it a love-hate triangle, that there seems to be some meat on that bone to me. Like, I went from being like, yeah, all right, this is a all right season of Billions to being very excited about the prospect for next season.
Yes. And I think it's not just the last 5 minutes, which sort of set up next season. To me, it's the last two episodes were also great.
Yes. Yeah, the last two episodes were great. Although I have to say, like, the resolution of Wendy's plot seemed a little bit, or arc rather, seemed a little bit pat, don't you think?
Well, yes, except that it also seems like the hammer that really drives the wedge back between Axe and Chuck. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, it sort of ended with a whimper after a lot of hullabaloo. Wendy's problems are over in a flash with no apparent stress, which is weird, except that it sort of, I think that's the act that sets up the next season, right?
Yeah. Do you think, because I mean, it's sort of, the sheriff, I feel like really fainted at least at the idea, faint with an E, of, you know, Axe and Wendy sleeping together. Which I think would have really, to me, taken that Chuck Axe rivalry to another up another notch, don't you think? Like, I'm sort of surprised they didn't go in that direction.
Well, I mean, I think that's on the table. She's staying at his house for an indeterminate period of time. So we'll see, but I certainly think that was hinted at, and I think it may have been more foreshadowing than a fake out.
Yeah, perhaps. I'm excited about getting Taylor in the mix, but I also feel like, you know, I like how this is playing out for next season. I don't know, like, how many more permutations of this are there, though, right?
Correct.
Like this Billions no longer feels like an 8-9 season series, as Showtime is often wont to do, right?
No, I don't know that it ever did, though. Did it to you?
Kinda. I kind of felt like you were going to be living these characters for a long time. Look, I'm okay with it. Like, I don't think there's anything wrong with it if it, you know, they wrap up after six seasons or whatever. Like, I'm okay with that. You know, The Good Place, I don't know if you saw this, but The Good Place announced that this upcoming season is going to be the last one.
Yeah.
And, you know, they felt like that was what was really right for the story, and I tend to agree. Like, if it's right for the story, you know, and 4 seasons or 5 seasons or 6 seasons is all there is, then great. You know, I'd rather have that than too many seasons. Like, we bitch about it all the time. So.
And I don't know. I mean, we'll see what they do. It's possible they try to drag this thing out, but it has seemed to be, I mean, I guess with the possible exception of the situation we just described where they maybe took a wrong turn with a major plot point this season, I feel like the show knows itself pretty well.
Yes, that it does.
So I don't. I'm not too worried about it stretching out into an ugly oblivion. I wouldn't be shocked if this or next season, you know, this coming or the following season is the last. But we'll see.
Indeed, we will. I'm here. I'm here until we decided Peter's out.
Like, honestly, if they had told you after season one, like, what is this, 5 now?
I think this was 4, but 4, here, I'll,
right.
I'll look it up.
So if they told you after season one, look, in season 3, to kind of get us to season 4, we're going to introduce a gender non-binary traitor who is, like, one of the best ever, and, you know, splinters from Axe to try to challenge him, you'd be like, oh man, that show jumped the shark.
That's an excellent point.
So I think it knows itself pretty well.
Yeah, 4 seasons.
Yeah, it's pretty deft at executing, like, somewhat, not necessarily, like, shocking development so much as things that, like, maybe surprise you for the level of sophistication given what the show is, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, it just, for a variety of reasons, I feel like these guys know exactly what they're doing.
Yeah, that is almost certain. I mean, look, you know, you can find fault with Billions. Like, the dialogue, I feel like it can get a little stilted at times trying to get to the pop culture references.
Yes, and certainly some of the cameos are, you know, limited mileage, I guess.
Yes, but you know what? I'm here for that. I kind of enjoy the experience of it.
Yes, it's,
you know,
part of the, like, experience. Like, Mark Cuban comes on screen all wooden and weird, and you're like, well, that's Mark Cuban.
Yeah, and the, you know, oh my God, Silvio, what's the name of the guy that everybody hates? the former SEC guy?
Oh, yes. Now that you said Silvio, I can't think of his real name, but yes, he's tremendous.
He's great, and like but I also recognize that he's not going to talk like a real person at any point, and I'm okay with it.
Oh, no. No, he's completely ridiculous, as is... You know, just as ridiculous, a smaller character and not as obnoxious, but just as ridiculous is the Foundation guy. I love the Foundation guy.
You're right. The Foundation guy, weirdly underrated. You know, he pops up, you know, twice a season maybe, but yes. And it's always enjoyable.
And he has bars every time. Like, he says some, like, low-key, offensive, upper-class shit every time he's on screen, and it's hilarious.
Yeah, it's like, bring me a guy with a stick up his ass. Okay, great.
Yeah, yeah. But a guy with a stick up his ass who's, like, aware of it and trying to make every buck he can off of it.
Yeah. That's the thing about the show, too, and I think one of the things that makes it such a fun experience is the bench is so deep. You know what I mean? It's definitely, you know, like, if Billions is an NBA team, it's the Raptors, right? Like, they are 12 deep when they want
to. Oh, man,
be, you know
can I tell
mean?
You this? Okay, first of all, the Raptors are, like, 7 or 8 deep, but more importantly,
well, playoff Raptors are 7 or 8 deep. Yeah, but, you know, but we get to OG Anunoby and those guys in the regular season. Like, those guys all play. You know what I mean?
OG Anunoby, but that was a hilarious cross up. He's healthy. It's weird that he's not playing. Anyway, I can't think of a television situation that made me more jealous than when David Costable Wags was like, all right, Wendy, let's get wasted.
Yeah.
It's like we're going to sit down and we're going to have some whiskey and we're going to get properly drunk. And I was like, man, I wish I could hang.
Yeah. Well, come to Louisville.
Yeah. I'm busy, sadly.
I have a feeling there's going to be some proper getting drunk for me over the next 3 days.
I encourage that. Louisville feels like a good place for it.
Yes, no, it feels like an ideal place for it. And that feels like an ideal pairing. And I do think it's almost, you know, I think a basketball team's almost sort of an apt metaphor, because I do almost feel like there's a competition between the actors on the show in a way where it seems like, you know, the people that really pop just wind up sort of getting more screen and story time. And so I think you see people sort of like rise up to the occasion over the course of this show. You know what I mean? Which is pretty neat. I don't know that there are too many other television shows that had that quality.
I like that. I like that take.
All right. So Billions, still good.
Still good. Still fun. Would recommend.
Can we say the same for Big Little Lies?
I don't know what we're doing here. It seems like we're doing kind of the same thing. Like, we're going to watch Meryl Streep experience what everyone else experienced last year. But
yeah.
I might be here for that. Like, yeah, I don't know about you. I guess mileage may vary. But, like, I was just sitting there like, all right, when is Meryl Streep coming back? Because that was dope.
She's chewing the scenery,
man, and she is fantastic.
Chomping on it. I think that, you know, if you recall last year, I was kind of out on Big Little Lies. Like, I think I almost went out. And you convinced me to kind of hang with it. And, you know, I came around by the end of the season.
Yeah.
So, you know, I didn't love this episode, but I also sort of feel like there was a lot of sort of, I don't know if throat clearing is the right word, but it was like, yeah, here's an opportunity for us to chew scenery, and we're going to sort of revisit where these characters are at, and where they're at is they're having a tough time. And, you know, maybe the story will move forward in episode 2 in some sort of meaningful way.
Yeah, we'll see what, I mean, look, these are great actors, and these are good people making this thing, so I imagine something is going to happen with, Jesus, what's the Bonet's kid name?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, whatever the...
Not Lisa.
Are you talking about Zoe Kravitz?
There it is.
Or are you talking about...
Yes.
I couldn't tell if you're talking about her or her daughter on the show. I didn't know if that's...
No. Sorry. Zoe Kravitz. Something is clearly going to happen there, you'd imagine. It seems
good,
in a lot of ways...
She was the one that seemed to be wildly underutilized in season one. So
yes, and she is, I think, being positioned as kind of the Shailene Woodley of this season, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And I shouldn't have been so dismissive to Reese Witherspoon when I was complimenting Meryl Streep. Like, one of them is on the screen most of the time, and that's kind of enough for me for now.
Yeah,
is that
I think
crazy?
That's fair.
I don't know. You're right. Nothing has really happened. The same characters are being reestablished as like what they are plus Meryl Streep.
Yeah, I mean, look, they're all titans. You know, watching Laura Dern vamp her way through a photo shoot.
Yeah,
it's strangely compelling. So
yeah, and then when she like goes up to the teacher, that was incredible. She's like, she walks away like three times and just keeps coming back to tell him more stuff about her daughter.
Yeah.
Oh, and my daughter was bullied last year, so we're going to try to avoid that. Like, she's, you're right. Everyone's excellent. And that's enough for me for now.
Yes, indeed. By the way, a huge tangent, but did you watch Enlightened back when it was on?
You know, it was one of those shows that, not unlike Schitt's Creek or High Maintenance for us, that I was like, that's right up my alley, and everyone says it's great, and I like watched an episode and just never totally dug in.
Yeah, I mean Lord knows when we have time to go back and rewatch things, and I'm certainly still holding very faint hope that someday I can get you to watch The Shield, but Enlightened is a good one, and only two seasons, so it's a pretty low episode total, all in all. And I think it is streaming on Amazon, I want to say.
Well, that certainly feels doable, although I'm not making any promises.
But worth your time for any of you out there who may have more time to watch things on television that you haven't watched. I don't know if I'm a big Jean-Marc Vallée guy. You know, sometimes I think he's a little overly digitally showy, and there's some things about this season that kind of leave me a little cold. But like I said, you know, we've got some of our finest actresses vamping and occasionally chewing scenery. And as long as it's more than Meryl Streep just is mean to people, then I'm all good, ready to go.
Yeah, a little more would be nice, but I quite enjoyed that for one episode.
Yeah, believe me, nothing wrong with watching Meryl Streep be mean to people.
Slight spoiler at the very end when she's like, now, who are we going to kill? I was like, oh, man. Deliberately being too morbid, like, there are only so many opportunities to see greatness do its thing, and she's just remarkable.
Yes, indeed. All right. So now the thing that I'm most curious about is where you landed on the new season of Black Mirror.
How many did you watch?
I watched all three.
I only watched two.
It's been a little divisive. I also don't know. It seems like maybe the order was different for people. So which two did you watch?
I watched the Anthony Mackie one. And
okay.
What?
Okay, said okay. Yep.
And then I watched the... what's his face? 70s show. The Google...
Topher Grace.
Yeah, Topher Grace.
Topher Grace as Mark Zuckerberg.
Yeah, basically. And I don't. Did you feel differently about them?
No, I love them.
Really,
I felt they fit right in line with what this series is about, and that seems to be, at least from the reactions that I've read, the minority opinion.
Yeah. I just don't think it's as good. I don't think, you know what it is? I think everything is the same, but Charlie Brooker used his best ideas already.
Oh, yes.
Like,
see, I
don't think the elevator pitches are nearly as good for these two episodes as they were for the first two seasons, especially, but even some of the Netflix season.
Here's what I really liked about those two episodes, all three of the episodes of the season, but I would say even those two episodes in particular, right? The show is called Black Mirror, and it's right that idea, right? Black Mirror 1 is a nickname for a television screen, and obviously the through line has been, you know, the insidious ways that technology, which we use and is helpful and makes our lives better in lots of ways, the insidious ways, the technology has a dark side, does bad things to us, right?
Yeah, but hold on. I think that's a perfect place to stop you just quickly, because in the first two seasons, they were like, you know, somewhat not distant future, but like not tomorrow for the most part. And they were incredibly creative. Like, what I thought was so incredible about those first couple seasons of Black Mirror is you had these smart, thoughtful, creative setups of how technology can turn on us that were easy to graft onto our sort of social behaviors and personalities in this era, but not just like, I looked at my phone screen while I was driving.
Yeah, we'll see. But I feel like the first part of that premise, everything you said before the butt, like I feel like that describes an episode like Striking Vipers to the T. You know what I mean?
I guess,
it's a not too distant future. It's a technology that we don't quite have, but are pretty close to having able to have immersive fantasy experiences, right, within a game.
I know, but it felt like half a Black Mirror episode to me, stretched out over an hour. Like, the resolution was just like, we're going to take a day off and you can fuck a computer every year.
Which I thought was an interesting and bittersweet kind of ending, which I think is atypical for Black Mirror. But to me, all of the complications that arise from that relationship and the creation of that intimacy, and then you taking these sort of gender fluid dynamics that are happening there in a way that could really, that's only made possible by the technology. Well, I found that fascinating. And I think the performances, particularly from Anthony Mackie, and I don't know the woman who
played
his wife.
She's from Sleepy Hollow. I love her. I think her name's Nicole Bellary or something.
Oh, okay.
Am I making that up?
No, I don't know, but you're right. She does seem like she's from Sleepy Hollow, and yeah, quite attractive. But regardless, I thought the performances in that episode were really great.
Bahari, Nicole Bahari, Bahrie.
Yeah, Striking Vipers to me stands right up there with some of the better Black Mirrors.
It's funny. Intellectually, when you walked through that, it seemed reasonable to me, but I was not nearly as affected. And I agree with – I thought the performances were great.
Yeah. So, I don't know.
I was convinced. I just didn't feel as – and maybe it's just because we're in season 5 or whatever, but I didn't feel as shocked or disturbed or, like, concerned about the world necessarily. And maybe it's because the endings of both of them were kind of anticlimactic, I felt.
Yeah, in a way. Although I have to say, talking about Smithereens, that I should have seen the request that the priest makes. I call him the priest. He's obviously not the priest.
He's the priest from Fleabag, yeah.
Yes, but he's the priest from Fleabag. The request that he makes that was surprising and to me. Which I probably should have seen it coming, and I thought it was sort of a neat way to go. That episode,
Wait, what do you mean?
To get that woman's, to get the password for that woman in his, Final moments, which I just for whatever reason I didn't see that coming, and I was like, oh, that's
just like a guy who'd lost it doing a nice thing with his final act, or maybe not his final act because we don't know what happened.
Yeah, we don't.
It's
interesting.
I went through this with The Sopranos. Don't make me decide what happened. I don't like that. Like,
well, look, I don't feel like it's like The Sopranos in that I don't, you know, nothing good was going to happen. Like either he's going to prison for the rest of his life or he's going to die. You know what I mean? Like that's.
Oh no, I think it's clear somebody died.
Yeah, there's not much mystery there, right?
Sure there is. Doesn't it matter who died? To me, those are two totally different stories, depending on who died. And, like, I guess maybe the point is, well, you have to decide for yourself who died, so what kind of story is this? What is this really? But no, fuck you. You tell me what story you're telling, and then I can decide if it's a good story or not. I hate like, that.
You felt like your going away feeling from that was ambiguity?
Yes.
All right. Yes. I mean, like you said, intellectually, I guess that's fair.
If an innocent man, hold on, if a totally innocent intern got shot in the head by irresponsible police, that's a very different story ending than a criminal getting shot in the head by mildly irresponsible police. Like, that's a hugely different story, message.
Do you think the message of this episode was about police conduct? Like, I feel like that was
The message of
the powder keg, you know what I mean? Like the fuse to the dynamite, almost.
But if the message of this was like, man, people use Facebook a lot and some of them crash cars, like, that's not interesting. And why do we have to go through all this for that message?
I don't know that this one was. I think it's a little bit more about, yes, people are using these things a lot, and the, you know, all of these things that are on your phone, and, you know, if you look at your phone right now, I'm going to guess there's at least 4 dozen apps, you know, 3 dozen apps, whatever you want to say, and that every one of those is fighting for your attention, like literally trying to suck time out of you and make it, you know, more. So that you'll spend more time there. That to me is sort of the premise, and that how easy it is to get lost and sucked into that and what kind of consequences it has. And obviously this is sort of an outlandish example of the consequences, but
yeah, honestly, if that
there
was
are
the
consequences for all of us, you know.
Yeah,
what I mean?
But if that was the premise, I think there are much more powerful, like, relatable ways to tell that story.
Perhaps.
Because this ends up being a story about a guy who blew a fuse and completely lost his mind and took out his own took out his anger and frustration from the consequences of his own irresponsible behavior on someone who fundamentally had nothing to do with it.
But isn't it also about a man who created this thing that has spiraled beyond his control?
Sure, but all these things are like 5 minutes,
and that is affecting people's lives in this really tangible way.
But then let's dig into what he's feeling, not show him for 5 minutes like looking a little sad.
Dig into what he's feeling. I mean, all right. So putting the message of the episode aside,
I just don't think that episode,
at the very least, take away like there were two really electric performances in that episode. I thought Topher Grace was fantastic.
Agreed. Hate these.
Jack Dorsey / Mark Zuckerberg.
I did not hate these. I'm not mad at them. I just don't think they're nearly I was floored by the BBC episodes. And when the first set of Netflix episodes came out, the majority of them, 4 or 5 out of 6 of them, like, were mind-bending. And neither of the ones I watched this week were that at all. They were
I think a lot of that is the season 5-ness of it.
Yeah, maybe. You know? And that's all I said, is I think Charlie Brooker used his best ideas for the first couple of few seasons. That's all I said. I'm not mad. I'm not saying this is terrible. But I do think it's significantly degraded. And I think the Striking Vipers, which you're right, fits the mold in a lot of ways. But to me, they already did the, like, what's the most horrifying consequence of this technology in the playtest episode. You know? And this was just like, here's a more complicated, lower-key version of how this technology might go wrong.
I would disagree, because I think this is the... this is the expiration of pornography, really, right? Within the, you know, within the Black Mirror context, where playtest was a little bit more about, you know, like a video game that might make you crazy or something like that, right? This is about
relating to
other people in this immersive fantasy world, and what happens when that fantasy world overtakes your real life world.
I understand that these are different. Now we're like sort of splitting hairs, I think, but like, if we're talking about the theme and the message, they're totally different. I'm talking about the, like, conceit of the technology. If we assume, and I have no idea if this is true, but just for the sake of discussion, that the way Charlie Brooker designs a Black Mirror episode is he goes, what's an interesting technology that could go wrong? And then he goes, all right, now how will it go wrong? The answer to the first question is the same for these two episodes. And I think,
you know,
while playtest was like mind-bending, this was a thoughtful philosophical piece, which is fine.
I mean, look, playtest, I think is you know, it's a movie in a different genre, right? Like it's trying to shock you.
Maybe that's what I'm saying, though. Yeah. Most of Black Mirror has been a movie in the shock genre. But, and that's not usually my thing, but it was so well done and smart that I think this has been. And I think it has taken a turn. Look, whereas San Junipero was like a welcome relief in its sort of philosophical rumination, now I feel like these are all San Juniperos.
Well, yeah, I mean, this episode I think is definitely, you know, I'll recommend to people another podcast. That's always great times. The last episode of The Watch that had Charlie Brooker and Annalise.
Yeah, I've been saving that. I've really fallen off with The Watch, but I've been saving that one because I wanted to watch Black Mirror first. And I'm very interested to hear what he has to say.
And, you know, they sort of sectioned it off. So, if you know, now that you've seen two, you could listen to it in two parts, you know what I mean? But yeah, I found that to be particularly revelatory, and I think he really sort of does go through, well, here's what I was thinking. And they do talk about Striking Vipers in the context of almost sort of being a male companion piece, to San Junipero in a way.
Interesting.
And I don't know. I think it's an interesting point. I like Striking Vipers much better than Playtest personally. But, you know, obviously I understand how people can feel differently.
Sorry, you like San Junipero better than Playtest, you said?
I like San Junipero, but I said I like Striking Vipers better than Playtest, personally. Yeah.
Oh. So. Yeah, well...
San Junipero is my favorite, I think.
Yeah, that one was phenomenal. You know, this... It's just different. This one might be more rewatchable. I'm just saying this... it feels like Black Mirror has changed fundamentally from something that was the shocking and disturbing potential consequences of new, you know, coming technology to thoughtful philosophical ruminations on coming technology.
Yeah, maybe.
It's just different.
I think it's interesting that Smithereens is really the first episode that takes place in the present day, and there's an actual, you know, time and place card on the screen. To me, the idea of Black Mirrorizing the present, taking it out of sort of the near similar future into just a now, is an interesting concept. But it sounds like for you there were sort of middling results in that.
Well, I think it's just harder to be shocking. And I don't know why I'm so fixated on that, but I do feel like that was a major component of just what this show was for its first few seasons.
Did you find an episode of, like was Be Right Back a shocking episode for you? Like, I feel like...
Remind me which
some
one
episodes
that is.
Were, Be Right Back is the one with the red-haired guy.
Oh,
the red-haired
Donald
Irish
Gleason?
Guy. thought of this. Kind of living doll.
A little bit. It's haunting, at least.
Yeah, I would say haunting is a better word. Yeah, for that.
Yeah,
I mean, I feel like some of those episodes were designed to shock, and some of those episodes were sort of different stories. You know what I mean?
Okay, I maybe should just say, like, whatever the emotive response was, I felt it more deeply from those other ones, whereas these were more thinkers.
Yeah, I'm curious. The creeping running time of these episodes, like, they're definitely becoming almost more movies now.
Certainly.
Are you positive or negative?
Negative. Why did I need to see so much of the COO what good did that lady do me? Why did I need boardroom conversations about maybe not contacting? Like, I think there's more fat than there was.
Yeah, it's fair. I mean, I think those scenes were definitely clearly meant to be a comment on the dot-com culture and sort of their ability to get information on you. You know, and how they use it, and how the idea that they knew more than the police and the FBI really at all times in that situation.
But I feel like there were three scenes where it was just people from the company talking about whether they should contact the Topher Grace.
Yeah, there was a little bit of that. I think it was a little bit, right. And I think there probably could have been a little less of that.
Well, and that's why I say, like, I don't know what we're doing here. Like, it felt like the early episodes were very direct, to the point. They were focused. They were, you know, like a knife attack, and these are automatic weapon. I don't know. I, like, there was like precision and focus on specific technological issues, and like it felt like it was meant to elicit a strong emotion with whatever twist or turn it took by the end. And all of them sort of had that form until, I think, some of the last season of Netflix and both of the ones I've watched this time are very much more in the, like, sit with this and think about it a while.
Yeah. I think maybe I'm just more into sit with this and think about it a while.
Well, I think we both are into that theoretically. It's just not necessarily what I was expecting from Black Mirror.
Yeah. All right. That's fair. I'm obviously be curious of what do you think about the Miley Cyrus episode.
Yeah, I'm excited for that. So we can talk about that next week if you want. But I also want to say, I think this is one of these conversations where it sounds like I hated it, but I didn't. It wasn't what I was expecting. And not in an exciting way, just in a...
You didn't like it as much as you...
I didn't like it quite as much. Yeah, in part because of my expectations, I think.
Yeah. That's fair. I'm high on these. And like I said, it seems to be the minority opinion, at least from what I've read on social media. But that's okay. All right. That's our TV stuff for this week. I feel like we should at least mention the seismic change in the NBA that happened since the last time we spoke.
Yeah, quickly, though, we'll kick Nosferatu to next week, because you only watched one, and I think, like, the second one explains what the hell's going on, which at least gives
that's
you
good,
it gives you a chance to enjoy it, because I know you didn't enjoy the first episode.
Yeah.
We did not discuss correct. It. I just know that about you.
I didn't hate it. I didn't enjoy it either. You know
right.
What I mean?
No, I knew that. And I was thinking to myself as I watched it, I'm glad we did two episodes, if only so we can kind of talk about what the hell's happening here. But three is probably even better.
Good. All right. So we'll watch some more Nosferatu. That's an excellent point. Yeah.
NBA.
So, you know, I say seismic change in the shift in the NBA. I don't know that there's a seismic shift in this series. As a result of this game, my sense is that this version of the Warriors, although just dripping with heart and guts and passion, they're still really outmanned in this present incarnation.
Yep.
And home or not home, that hasn't really seemed to change through this series, and I don't know what would necessarily change about Game 6 or, a Game 7.
Well, I mean, the only things that can change are, this is Captain Obvious territory, but basically the way the Warriors win is if the Raptors' buttholes get too tight, which they seemed to at the end of Game 5, and, not or, but and, Steph and Klay do special things. I think you could say,
having maybe Steph and Klay to do special things and one other guy on top of that, it seems like, right?
Yeah,
like you need that kind of like 17-point boogie game, or Iguodala, or yeah. Draymond makes some threes.
Yeah, but I think they, of course, you're going to need some other contributions. But to me, if the Raptors play their highest level game against this version of the Warriors, I think that that beats. Well, you know, you never know. Steph and Klay, you never know, man. Draymond, too. Like, these guys are made of the stuff of champions. Andre, the whole roster, really. They're made of tough stuff, and I would never count them out, but it is a mountain to climb.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, look, they've climbed a few mountains over the course of the series. Certainly the Oklahoma, being down 3-1 Oklahoma City, you know, winning two games against Houston where, you know, they were down 17 at the half in game 6 that series. And
yeah, I mean, that's the last time they were facing elimination, right? And
yeah,
they won. But it's just, look, Kawhi is incredible. The Raptors have been well coached. They've played great defense. They're a really, really good team. And I wish we had gotten a healthy Kevin Durant to see what this finals would have been at full strength. My instinct is the Warriors would have won in 6 games, but who knows? I really would have liked to see it. I think that's the finals we deserved, and it's a bummer we didn't get it.
Just a quarter and a half of not even really healthy,
but impactful
Kevin Durant out there. Like, just gave you a glimpse of like what this series could have been. You know,
we got the best quarter of the series.
Guarding Kawhi, you know, like just.
It was the best quarter of the series, I think, overall. Just the quarter where both teams both played really well. It was awesome to watch. It was super exciting. And then, yeah, man, the injury sucks. And I just hate that we live in a world where so much of the commentary since that injury has been about who to blame and who's irresponsible and not about a fucking champion doing everything he could. It's just, it drives me up a wall.
Yeah, I'm 100% with you on that. The conversation around this game has sucked.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
The same stupid assholes who accused Kevin Durant of not trying hard enough to get back called the Warriors, you know, irresponsible, careless monsters for bringing him back too soon. And it just, there's just no accountability. And it pisses me off because that take in particular ignores logic and reason and incentive. What possible good does it do Warriors management to bring a compromised Kevin Durant back for 11 minutes in Game 5? Like, whose great master plan is that? They don't want him hurt. They still believe they have a chance to sign him, but more importantly, if they're bringing him back, it's because they need him. Not for 11 minutes, for 3 games. And if he's not healthy enough...
And then what, like, it's pretty obvious they wouldn't want to see that happen to him. I mean, what are we talking about here? So...
And the people who are like, you know, Bob Myers should be called to called to the carpet for this. Like, how dare he push a player? Like, who do you think Kevin Durant is? Just some dude that was sitting there like, I don't care so much. And Bob Myers was like, no, we're paying you. You must get out there. And Kevin Durant was like, oh, sorry, fearless leader. I will obey. Come on. Yeah.
That would be at odds with everything we know about the NBA. I think this is part of a thing that is not necessarily driven by ESPN, but that ESPN is sort of a participator in, and it's this kind of TMZification of sport where the conversation around the game so much now revolves around speculation and rivalry and gossip and people not actually dunking on people on the court, but almost like social media dunking on people. Like, that seems to be so much about what people's interest are interested in. And I think it's a huge part of kind of what has popularized the NBA with a lot of people, is that it lends itself to Twitter in this way. But this is sort of the discussion that we're left with when we're having this incredible series with this, these incredible displays of athleticism in basketball. And we're mostly talking about what's going to happen after the finals. And,
yeah, but see, I don't want
to
let...
And whose fault is it? Everything has to have a hero and a villain.
I'm not letting these assholes off the hook that easy. Like, I'm sorry. Everything you just said is fine with me. None of that requires disingenuous bullshit to be spewed from the mouths of morons. None of it.
Yes.
You can have TMZ. There's plenty of entertaining stuff off the floor that's real. You don't have to make up total nonsense and scream it on television at the top of your lungs in order to have an interesting conversation about the basketball, about the drama, about the social media. It's all right there for you without being a dick. It is.
Yeah.
And I'm so sick of
the jump
notion.
Does that very well.
What?
The Jump does that very well, I think.
Exactly.
Right?
And The Jump is one of the most popular shows. And yet, nobody thinks to themselves, maybe we should do more of this. It's just, meanwhile, FS1 built a whole station on screaming dumb stuff at each other, and nobody's watching it.
Yeah.
So you tell me, who's wrong here? Is it the consumer that's having garbage thrown at their faces 24/7? Or is it the garbage thrower who never tried throwing decent food in the first place?
Yep. I'll go with the garbage thrower. Although, like, I will say, you know, I mean, obviously, I know you didn't just mean morons, but like there were some smart people throwing around some garbage about KD in the days, at least prior to this, and then obviously certainly post. I mean, there was a Tim Kawakami, not to single anybody out. Actually, I'm just going to, yes.
Oh, no.
No.
Let's single out Tim Kawakami. I'm fine
that
with
was
this.
A
I'm fine with this because I
poor,
think,
like
I don't usually. Hopefully nobody listens to this like usual. I don't usually talk about Tim because I try to respect what he's accomplished and the pelts on the wall, so to speak. The guy's a really good writer. He's done way more in this industry than I likely ever will. But let me just say something about Tim Kawakami. The fact that he wrote an article that quotes several Warriors players as supporting Kevin Durant, and then based on no information whatsoever, concludes that they might be mad he's not working hard enough to get back, was totally irresponsible. And I do not for a second believe that he feels any remorse as he self-flagellates on Twitter, because it's the same Twitter behavior he engages in every time he writes anything. Oh, woe is me. Everyone who says anything against him, he retweets them and writes some martyrish comment about it. And frankly, it's trash. It's absolute garbage. And he knew that was a garbage conclusion that was not supported by what he reported when he wrote it. And he's the editor-in-chief of that organization. So,
They ran that piece. They ran a Sam Amick piece that was very much like, well, there's a lot of confusion in the Warriors about what's going on with KD. That, again, where it was like, I don't know, there's a lot of between-the-line reading that's happening. And then it's followed by like six athletic pieces about, oh, all the talk. It's like, the talk that you guys are putting out there.
And the Athletic is supposed to be the, we don't take ads because we don't want to be beholden to anyone. We're not going to do this hot take nonsense. We're responsible reporters. And all they did was, and you know what? That's what Tim Kawakami does now.
Yep.
There's
I
a
think
time in his life
large,
where he may have been
stuff.
A giant.
That's why I was surprised, you know?
Well, but it's been a long time since Tim Kawakami was the sports writing giant that you seem to perceive him as. A long time. And most of the last few years he's spent doing exactly this sort of stuff and tweeting about it in a way very close to this, while taking a little less responsibility. So great. You're the editor-in-chief who wrote a wildly irresponsible hot take column misrepresenting quotes from players and then published it. The guy got hurt. Because don't you think for a second he would apologize for any of this if Kevin Durant hadn't suffered a you know, season-ending, possibly season-losing injury? Not in a million years would he have apologized for doing a thing that was just as wrong before Kevin Durant got hurt as it was after. And instead, what he would have been doing is retweeting people who said something that he disagreed with and trivializing their opinions and making it seem like they're laughable for even challenging him on any level. And it's garbage. It's garbage.
Yeah, sure is. I hated that piece. I guess I'm not surprised that you also read and hated it. I didn't know it was going to quite elicit that depth of response. But
well, you know what, man? I try to respect a guy who's done what Kawakami has done. But I watch this same behavior over and over and over again, and every time I look at the tweets and I want to be like, man, I want to respond to that and circle it with a red pen and be like, you shouldn't act like this, dog. And I don't, because, frankly, he's a lot more powerful than me in this market, and, like, it's bad for my career to have a bad relationship with Tim Kawakami, but, like, at a certain point, I lose my temper and I forget about my career. And I don't think it's likely to have any real effect on it, but, like, I just, frankly, he's a guy I respected a lot 8 years ago, and not so much anymore. That's how I feel about it.
Well, I'm glad you shot your shot on this podcast.
No, thank God it's on the podcast, because I have held back from doing it on the radio where people who care might hear it.
Yes, I meant that twofold. I'm glad that I got to hear it, and I'm glad it was here and, you know, not over the airwaves.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and again, like, he's friends with people I really like. He's had a great career. I'm not a fan of the way he comports himself, and I think he does dishonor to his past successes with a lot of his antics.
Yeah, I haven't been a fan of this discussion in those ways, and certainly ways that go beyond that. And I'm glad that we're at least getting back to basketball.
Yeah, man. And look, I think there's the, you know, other than the heartbreak of Kevin Durant, and it sucks. And I don't think it changes his money, but it certainly changes
or his
long-term
outlook. I mean, you know, I saw David Aldridge speaking to the Athletic reported today that. The Knicks, Lakers, Nets, Clippers, and the Warriors, yeah, we're all just as interested as they were before. So
of course his
market's going to be fine.
Yeah, and I hear people saying, oh, you're going to pay a guy $40 million to do nothing? And no, you're going to pay him 5 years of $40 million for 4 years of Kevin Durant. And it's absolutely worth it. So, any decent or rich NBA owner will be able to see the wisdom in that, if you ask me. So I'm not worried about his money. I'm sure he's not worried about his money, but it does change his career in a huge way. And we don't know. I can tell you for an almost absolute fact that Kevin Durant will come back and be capable of all-star production, but I don't know if he'll be one of the 5 or 10 greatest players of all time still. I don't know that we'll ever see the Kevin Durant that we all declared the best player in the world 4 weeks ago. We might never get to see that again, and that is heartbreaking if you're a basketball fan. One of the most electric, impressive, awesome performers of all time, and a guy who routinely stepped up in the clutch, no matter what some of these idiots want to tell you. A guy who routinely sacrificed for his teammates just like he did on whatever night that was. Monday night.
You just got to look at Boogie running around, right? And just, you know, even if this had never happened and you were just like saying, you know, look at what DeMarcus Cousins is now versus what he was, you know, 3 years ago.
Right. And so to me, that leads to the second thing, which the first thing is from that game to me is just you feel awful for KD and you wish the best and it stinks. And the second thing is, like, if you don't know who these dudes that are left are by now, you're not paying attention or you're deliberately lying, which describes a shocking percentage of the people covering the series. But all Steph Curry and Klay Thompson and Draymond Green do is fight and push through challenges and friggin' win, man. They are champs. They have the heart of champs. And it's filtered down through everyone on this roster, with the possible exception of Jonas Jerebko. Just kidding, that was mean. But Kevon Looney and Quinn Cook and look, some dudes that have no business on the floor in an NBA Finals game, and they're all pulling and tugging and fighting to make this A, continue to be very entertaining, and B, a more compelling and longer lasting series. And it's just, if that doesn't prove to you the mettle of these Golden State Warriors, you're an idiot or an asshole. They are the toughest. Ryan Russillo said this, and he's right. There is not a mentally tougher team in sports.
Yep. It's one of those things. Look, I get why people resent the Warriors.
Sure.
You know, like all that stuff. Like all the stuff that happened. I think it's dumb that it bothers people, but I get why it does. I don't understand how you can't at a minimum have respect for what this team is doing out there. You know what I mean? Like they are, you know, no pun intended. They are warriors. Every last one of them, you know what I mean?
Yep.
So, you know, and you may beat them, you know what I mean? But you're going to have to knock them out to do it. So,
yes, sir.
It's, you know, I still heavily favor Toronto to win the series, but I can't wait to watch them, see them try. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree. And look, hopefully Thursday night at Oracle, they send the old barn out with a bang, as Tim Roy might say.
Yeah. By the way, you know, I do think the implications for Durant are probably pretty much the same, but I do think what this does to the rest of the free agent market is pretty fascinating. You know, I think it changes the value of Anthony Davis. I think changes the value of somebody like Jimmy Butler. You know,
what it changes is just whichever team signs Kevin Durant probably has to admit to itself it is aiming for the 2021 title. And outside of that, I don't really want to get into it because I don't care right now.
Yeah, that's fair.
I think
we got we got plenty of time to think about that. Yeah, let's do homework. I feel like we've already failed at our short show.
We failed at our short show. Also, I am sweating because it has gotten so hot in the room that I am recording in right now that, like, I think it would be enough to kill a small child or a cold-blooded animal.
I'm impressed that we made it this far without a real complaint about this from you. That's well done.
Sweat is beating on my upper lip. We did not talk about homework.
No, we did.
The NBA finals will be over.
What do you got?
The NBA finals will be over, so we probably can do a little free agent talk at that point. And obviously mention what happened. We're gonna do Nosferatu. I know Nosferatu is a fine pronunciation of that, but I just can't bring myself to not do something weird with my mouth because of the weird way it's written. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, that I agree. Just because, you know, the four, like, it's almost like the case
and the
changes
a,
somewhere
and the two
there.
For that matter. I just want to say them all, 4A2, but then I feel weird afterwards. I don't know. That's my biggest problem with
the
show. Actually,
the title's kind of dumb.
It's an extremely dumb title, and frankly, two episodes in, I'm not totally sure what it refers to. There are a few new shows this week, but I don't know anything about them, which makes it tough to decide whether to watch them. I kind of feel like, oh, you know, we do get Euphoria on HBO.
Yeah. Well, and then there's also, I believe, City on a Hill.
And City on a Hill on Showtime. Yeah, I wasn't sure if you were interested in that one.
Definitely am. And then I feel like I don't know that we necessarily add more stuff on top of this, but have we haven't talked about When They See Us, right?
No. Have Netflix? You watched it?
I have not, but...
okay, so maybe we could at least start that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's probably more than enough for me. I find it difficult to accomplish anything when the temperature is over 90 degrees.
That's fair.
And, like, while I realize that is incredibly whiny, I have to tell you, like, there's not any air conditioning in the Bay Area. And the houses are made to hold heat because it's not supposed to be hot. So, like, when it's 98 during the day, it gets up to, like, 105 in the upstairs of my house. And then it stays in the 90s until, like, midnight because there's not great ventilation. So it's just... I just spent way too much time complaining about it, but I'm just saying let's lighten my load as much as we can.
All right, well, wipe that lip off and let's get out of here.
Bye!
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed, the light's out. Butter's getting hard, the eggs are cooling, and the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor, have yourself a tremendous evening.